Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are really getting into something fascinating. It bridges physics and, well, future tech, superconductivity.
Yeah.
We're looking at the work of Stephen Blundell, drawing on his great summaries of this pretty incredible field.
Yeah, and our goal is to give you, the listener, a solid picture of, well, one of the most profound things in science, really. It's a state of matter with these two almost paradoxical qualities.
Paradoxical how?
Well, electricity flows with absolutely zero resistance, like forever, and at the same time, magnetic fields get actively pushed out.
Actively pushed out. Okay,
yeah.
It sounds completely counterintuitive.
It is, but it's very real. And it's the physics behind some, you know, really critical technology we rely on every single day.
So that's the hook, isn't it? This isn't just lab coats and equations. We're actually talking about the core tech and MRI machines,
right?
The ones in hospitals saving lives.
Exactly. And also the giant particle accelerators like the LHC, you know, the ones probing the universe's secrets.
So we're kind of taking a shortcut today, getting to grips with this quantum magic, as
yeah.
Some physicists apparently call it.
That's a good way to put it. And Blundell makes a really important point right at the start. Superconductivity isn't just being a really good conductor.
Okay.
It's a fundamentally different state of matter. It's governed by quantum mechanics, which is usually tiny atomic scale stuff. But here, the effects show up macroscopically.
You mean on a scale we can actually see and touch?
Precisely.
So the big question Blundell tackles is, how? How do these rules of the ultra-small, the quantum rules, suddenly scale up to affect like a lump of material?
Exactly. And figuring that out has huge implications. If we could truly master superconductivity, especially at higher temperatures, we're talking revolutions.
Revolutions like?
Like lossless power transmission, imagine. No energy wasted in power lines, big breakthroughs in energy storage. And it's fundamental for building practical quantum computers, too.
Wow. Okay, before we dive into the zero resistance and all that, let's meet the expert guiding us. Who is Stephen Blundell?
Right, Stephen Blundell. He's a distinguished professor of physics at Oxford. His specialty is condensed matter physics. That's the physics of solids and liquids, basically. He focuses on magnetism and quantum materials.
So he's not just looking back at the history. He's actually involved in the research.
Oh, yeah. For decades, he's been right there at the cutting edge.
And he's written textbooks, too, I gather. Stuff students actually use.
That's right. Things like concepts in thermal physics. Very well regarded. What makes his take so useful, especially for listeners trying to get a handle on this, is that he does both theory and experiment.
Ah, so he gets the complex math, but also the messy reality of, you know, actually making this stuff work in the lab, cooling things down to near absolute zero.
Exactly. It gives him this grounded perspective. He talks about the real challenges researchers face, which helps him explain the really tough concepts in a way that's still accurate, but also, you know, understandable.
Okay, let's get into his analysis then. Blundell says you can't understand superconductivity without grappling with its two sides, right? Two pillars.
Yes. The two pillars are absolutely crucial. The first one is the one most people know or have heard of. Perfect conductivity.
Zero electrical resistance.
Exactly. Below a specific temperature, the critical temperature or Tesori resistance just vanishes. Poof.
But the second one, you mentioned Blundell emphasizes this one more.
He does. It's perfect diamagnetism. More famously known as the Meissner effect. And this is where that magic idea comes in.
Right, that quote you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, superconductivity is the closest thing to magic that physics can offer. Because having a material that does both, carries current forever, and pushes out magnetic fields, it's just astonishing.
So his analysis kind of follows the story. From discovery to theory to the mysteries.
Okay. Pretty much, yeah. From Heike Kamerling-Ahn's accidentally finding it in 1911, through the big theoretical explanation BCS theory, and right up to the ongoing puzzle of high-temperature superconductors.
Okay, let's unpack that Meissner effect a bit more. Why is it such a big deal?
Yeah.
Why isn't zero resistance enough?
Great question. Because imagine you just had a hypothetically perfect conductor, no resistance. If you cooled it down in a magnetic field, that field would just get trapped inside. Frozen in, essentially.
Okay.
But a real superconductor, when it cools below TC, actively kicks the field out. That's the Meissner effect, discovered in 1933. And that proves it's a distinct thermodynamic phase of matter, a whole new state, not just a perfect wire.
Got it. So let's rewind to 1911. Kamerlingh Onnes. He was all about extreme cold, Ron.
He was the king of cold. He just managed to liquefy helium, which was a huge deal. It opened up temperatures just a few degrees above absolute zero.
And he was testing mercury.
Yeah, pure mercury. He expected its resistance to drop smoothly as it got colder, maybe level off. Instead, at 4.2 Kelvin, that's really, really cold, the resistance didn't just get small, it went to zero. Completely. Abruptly.
Wow. And how did they prove it was really zero, not just incredibly tiny?
Ah, the persistent current experiments. Basically, you start a current flowing in a closed loop of superconducting wire.
And then
you just wait. Because there's zero resistance, there's nothing to slow the current down or dissipate the energy. These currents have been shown to flow for years with no measurable decay, no battery needed.
Years. Okay, that's definitive proof, and the Meissner effect, that's why we see those pictures of magnets floating.
Exactly. That levitating magnet is the Meissner effect in action. The superconductor below it refuses to let the magnet's field lines penetrate.
So it pushes back.
It pushes back hard enough to counteract gravity. The magnet essentially sees a mirror image of itself magnetically inside the superconductor, creating repulsion.
Okay, so they knew what was happening. Zero resistance, field expulsion.
Mm-hmm.
But the how,
yeah,
that took longer. The Lunden brothers.
Right. Fritz and Heinz Lunden came along in the 1930s. They developed the first sort of mathematical description. It wasn't microscopic, didn't explain the why at the electron level.
But it connected the dots.
It did.
Yeah.
It mathematically linked zero resistance and the Meissner effect. And they introduced a key concept, penetration depth.
Which is?
The tiny distance a magnetic field can just barely sneak into the surface before being completely canceled out.
But the deep question remained. Electrons are negatively charged. They repel each other. How on earth do they pair up, which seemed necessary for this state?
That was the massive hurdle. And that's where Leon Tupper had his brilliant insight, the foundation for the later BCS theory. He realized the electrons don't pair up directly.
Okay.
The pairing is mediated, helped along, by the crystal lattice itself, the structure the electrons are moving through. Specifically, by lattice vibrations, which we call phonons.
And Blundell has an analogy for this, right? The mattress thing.
He does. It's a great one. Imagine the rigid grid of atoms in the metal as like a soft mattress. The first electron moves through and it's negative charge pulls the nearby positive atomic core slightly towards it, like a bowling ball making a dent.
Okay, dent in the mattress.
Right. That dent creates a region with a slight excess of positive charge for a very brief moment. And that positive region attracts a second electron passing by.
Ah. So the lattice distortion caused by the first electron attracts the second one.
Exactly. It's a very subtle indirect attraction, but it's enough to overcome their mutual repulsion and form a stable pair, a Cooper pair.
And then Bardeen, Cooper, and Schrieffer put it all together in 1957 with BCS theory. What was their big step?
Their huge insight was that these Cooper pairs don't just act individually. Below the critical temperature, they all condense. They lock together into a single giant collective quantum state.
Like a quantum fluid.
Precisely. A macroscopic quantum fluid described by one quantum wave function for the whole system. Think of it like a perfectly synchronized dance troupe or that school of fish analogy. They all move together.
So you can't just bump one electron or one pair off course easily.
Exactly. To create resistance, you'd need to scatter an electron, break its momentum. But here, the pairs are locked into this collective state. To break a pair and cause scattering requires a minimum amount of energy, the energy gap.
And normal vibrations just don't have enough energy to break that gap.
Not at low temperatures, no. So the whole condensate, this quantum fluid, just flows without any friction, any dissipation, zero resistance.
I'm blowing. Okay, now, practically speaking, there's a difference between types of superconductors. Type I and type 2.
Yes, very important distinction. Type I superconductors are usually pure elements like lead or mercury. They exhibit perfect Meissner effect. They expel all magnetic field.
Sounds good.
It is, but they have a downside. If the external magnetic field gets too strong, even slightly above a certain critical field, HAC, the superconductivity just completely collapses. They revert back to being normal metals.
So they're not very robust for applications needing strong magnets.
Not at all. That's where type 2 materials come in. These are often alloys or compounds. They're the workhorses for things like MRI and particle accelerators.
What makes them different? How do they handle strong fields?
They have a clever strategy. Between two critical fields, HC1 and HC2, they allow some magnetic field to penetrate, but only in very specific, tiny, quantized tubes.
Quantized tubes, like little magnetic threads going through the material.
Exactly. These are called magnetic vortices, or fluxons. The material around these tubes remains superconducting.
How does letting some field in help?
It allows the material to stay superconducting in much, much higher overall magnetic fields compared to type I. And crucially, there's something called flux pinning.
Pinning, like pinning them down.
Sort of, yeah. Tiny imperfections or defects deliberately introduced into the material act like ankle points. They trap these magnetic vortices, holding them still.
Why is holding them still important?
Because if the vortices move around, that movement actually creates resistance, which kills the superconductivity. By pinning the flux lines, the material prevents this resistance, allowing it to sustain huge currents, even in strong fields. That's essential for applications.
Okay, that makes sense. Which leads us to the big shockwave in the field. 1986, high-temperature superconductors.
Right. Bednors and Muller. They found superconductivity in a ceramic material, a cuprit, at 35 Kelvin.
Still very cold, but...
But way, way hotter than anyone thought possible based on BCS theory. BCS theory kind of implied a limit around maybe 25, 30 Kelvin tops. Finding it at 35K in a ceramic, of all things, just blew the doors off. It sparked this huge global research frenzy.
A frenzy that's still going on because, as Blindell points out, we still don't fully understand how these high-temperature ones work.
That's the incredible thing. Decades later, it remains one of the biggest unsolved problems in condensed matter physics. We have materials that superconduct at much higher temperatures, even above liquid nitrogen temperature, 77K. But there's no consensus on the exact mechanism. BCS theory doesn't seem to fully explain it.
It really shows that science isn't all wrapped up, does it?
Absolutely. There's always room for major surprises.
So, stepping back, thinking about someone learning this stuff,
right.
What are the big messages Blundell wants us to take away?
I think there are three really core ideas. First, just the sheer wonder of macroscopic quantum mechanics.
The quantum rules can apply to big things.
Exactly. An entire wire, billions and billions of electrons, acting as one single quantum entity. It makes you appreciate how unified physics is from the smallest scales to the ones we see.
What's the second takeaway?
The constant dance, the interplay between theory and experiment. Almost every big leap, London, BCS, the HTS discovery, happened because experiments showed something that the current theory couldn't explain. It forced people to rethink.
Science being messy but productive.
You got it. It's not a straight line. And the third thing is humility recognizing the limits of our current understanding.
Because we still don't get the high temperature stuff.
Right. It's a reminder that even with amazing theories like BCS, nature can still throw curveballs. There are major puzzles still out there, which is actually exciting, right? It means there's more to discover.
Definitely. Blundell really does have some great ways of putting things. We had the magic quote. What else stood out?
Well, related to the BCS theory, he emphasizes the collective behavior. He says something like, the BCS theory showed that the whole can indeed be greater than the sum of its parts.
Capturing that idea of emergence, the Cooper pairs creating something new together.
Precisely. The zero resistance state isn't just about individual electrons. It's about their collective, synchronized quantum dance.
He also really hammers home the potential impact, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. The quote about room temperature superconductors, as revolutionary for technology as the transistor was for electronics, they would change everything.
That puts the stakes incredibly high, changing everything.
It really would. Think about energy, computing, transport. Lossless power grids alone would be world-changing.
So let's bring it back to the listener. Where do they actually encounter this, maybe without even realizing it?
The biggest one is definitely MRI scanners in hospitals, magnetic resonance imaging.
They rely on superconducting magnets.
Totally. Those incredibly strong, incredibly stable magnetic fields needed to image inside the body. They are generated by powerful type 2 superconducting magnets cooled with liquid helium. Without superconductivity, MRI, as we know it, just wouldn't be feasible.
Okay, that's huge. What about in research?
Particle accelerators. The Large Hadron Collider, LHC, at CERN is probably the most famous example. It uses thousands of superconducting magnets.
To steer the particles.
Exactly. To bend those beams of protons traveling near the speed of light requires immense magnetic fields, fields that only type 2 superconductors operating with flux pinning can provide reliably.
And looking ahead, that dream of lossless power transmission.
That's the really big potential application for energy and the environment. If we could make high-temperature superconductor wires cheaply and robustly enough to replace copper power lines, even if they still need cooling with liquid nitrogen.
The energy savings would be enormous. Less waste, more efficient grid.
Exactly. But Blundell's caution here is important too, because the HTS mechanism is still a puzzle.
We should be skeptical of hype.
Yeah. Be wary of splashy media headlines about easy room temperature breakthroughs. The physics is really complex, and genuine progress needs rigorous, peer-reviewed evidence. It's usually not as simple as the headlines suggest.
That's good advice.
Yeah.
Okay, final thoughts then. What really struck me from this deep dive is how something so weird, so esoteric, found by accident at incredibly low temperatures.
It's now absolutely essential technology.
Right, it shows the unpredictable long-term value of just fundamental curiosity-driven research. You can't plan these kinds of breakthroughs.
That's a great point. And for me, the final takeaway is the excitement of the unknown. The fact that high-temperature superconductivity is still an unsolved mystery. It's not a failure. It's fantastic.
How so?
It tells us that science is alive. It's still evolving. We haven't figured everything out. There are potentially whole new paradigms of physics waiting to be discovered to explain these materials. It's a story that's definitely still being written.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.